Continuing with Werner Sombart's quote, "The Jew stands out as the businessman pure and simple, as the man who in business takes account only of business and who, in conformity with the spirit of true capitalist economy, proclaims in presence of all natural ends the supremacy of gain and profit." End of quote. The Jew it was, according to Sombart, who broke down the mentality of the Middle Ages and commercialized all the relations of men. Professor O'Brien dissents from Werner Sombart's thesis that the growth of the capitalistic spirit, the spirit of subordination of all other considerations to that of profit, was due to the Jews. He admits, however, that Sombart's contention would be quite correct if for Jews we substituted Judaism, and he points out the importance of Calvin's justification of usury in preparing the way for modern developments. The Puritans adopted Old Testament ideas. The Old Testament idea of the reward of virtue in this world fitted in with the Puritan teaching about the fulfillment of one's vocation. It is unnecessary, for the purpose of this work, to apportion responsibility for the triumph of what we may call the does-it-pay mentality in the world between Jews and Puritans. At any rate, if the Puritans subordinated men to production, the Jews completed the process by subordinating production itself to money. The right order of money as a means for production and production subservient to man is now, as we know, reversed. Sombart puts the responsibility for this reversal of order on his own people. Quote, "From continually dealing in money, the Jews have more and more grown accustomed to consider and evaluate the world not from the natural qualitative point of view, but purely from the abstract quantitative aspect. They have, as a result, laid bare all the mysteries that were hidden in money. They have found out all its wonderful capacities. They have become the masters of money, and thanks to this mastery of money, they are the rulers of the world, as I have exhaustively shown in the earlier chapters of this work." End of quote. In one of the earlier chapters, to which Professor Sombart alludes, speaking of some of the wonderful capacities of money, thanks to the discovery of which his people have become the real rulers of the world, he writes, quote, "If we want to make manifest in one sentence the direction in which modern political economy is moving, we can say the stock exchange agents of the banks are becoming, in an ever-increasing measure, the dictators or rulers of economic life. All economic happenings are more and more subordinate to the decisions of finance. The question whether a new industrial undertaking is to spring up or an existing one to be developed, whether the ownership of a shop or store is to get the means to extend his business still further, all these questions are decided in the offices of banks and bankers. In just the same way, the sale of products is becoming, to an ever greater extent, a problem of finance. Our greatest industries are indeed already just as much financial associations as industrial undertakings. The other industries, as well, are, in ever-growing measure, dependent on financial or stock exchange operations in order to capture their markets. The prices of most of the world's products and raw materials and of most ready-made goods are influenced by the stock exchange, and the man who wants to win in the present competitive struggle must be master of the stock exchange." End of quote. Needless to say, the final result of all this maneuvering is that a few men control the destinies of millions everywhere, and the livelihood of the ordinary man is at the mercy of stock exchange coups. Liberalism and laissez-faire sprung from Protestant individualism opposed all state interference. For them, man was exclusively a person, but when the person has run its course, all except a few are mere individuals at the mercy of the manipulators of money. On the other hand, the harassing insecurity of their lot is causing the sufferers from this system to listen to the well-paid advocates of communism. Both liberalism and socialism, communism, confuse person and individual and consider society simply as a material juxtaposition of autonomous individuals. The individual, for them, is autonomous, that is, his liberty knows no limits, reason itself being at its service. In the name of liberty, the strong personalities wiped out the weak in the capitalist state. Now, in the name of equality, the weak banded together will aim at wiping out the strong. Men are specifically equal, that is, all human beings are persons, and, as such, are free and equal, but personality is realized unequally in the different individuals of the human species. Human beings are individually unequal. The erroneous doctrine of the equality of individuals, like the erroneous doctrine of unrestricted liberty, has been a fruitful source of confusion. The Protestant doctrine of the equality of man in the mystical body, that is, the erroneous doctrine of the non-existence of a hierarchical order therein, was taken advantage of by the nobles to loot the property of the church and aim at bringing down the kings. Of course, they crushed those who, like the German peasants, wished to apply the doctrine of equality to themselves. The uprise of Masonry and its triumph at the French Revolution led to the proclamation of equality on the natural level. The middle class, bourgeois, profited by this to attack the nobles. Of course, those who, like Babeuf, wish to be completely logical in applying Masonic ideals and do away with private property were not then listened to. Now the disillusioned, propertyless wage owners, unemployed under the Judeo-Puritan capitalist system, are being urged against the bourgeois and in the direction of the opposite extreme of Judeo-Masonic communism, in which land and all the means of production shall be owned by the state and administered by state officials. We know what that means. The ordinary man will be a mere individual at the mercy of the political wire pullers and of the Jewish financial forces which, in the last resort, maneuver them. Under the capitalist system of mass production, scarcely anybody could impress his personality on any article to the production of which he contributed. Workmen ceased to be really human artisans in proportion as human production lost its artistic character and became infrahuman. The tendency, then, is to react against this abuse of private property by doing away with it altogether, and thus reduce all production to the infra-human level. The Catholic ideal of economic relations, outlined in the encyclicals Rerum Novarum of Pope Leo XIII and Quadragesimo Anno of Pope Pius XI, of widely diffused private ownership with highly developed family life, based upon the solidarity of men in the mystical body of Christ, holds out an ideal of economic organization above the two opposed errors of individualism and communism. The doctrine held by both Luther and Calvin of the essential corruption of human nature by original sin had as consequence that redeemed man is never admitted to live the divine life vitally as his own. He is never intrinsically purified by the infusion of sanctifying grace,